keen mountaineer and former Prime Minister, the Right Honourable Helen Clark, has been in Nepal to mark the 100th birthday of Sir Edmund Hillary. She visited that region so dear to Sir Ed's heart, along with his daughter Sarah, to see firsthand the real and lasting impact of his Himalayan Trust, which was set up in the 1960s. And she's with me now in studio. Kia ora.
Kia ora.
Nice to see you.
Thank you.
How did it go?
Monumental.
Yeah.
Just phenomenal. So wonderful to be trekking along and you see Mount Everest sort of popping over the hilltops.
Really?
It is absolutely epic trekking.
You've been there before?
I had never been in the mountains before. I had been in and out of Kathmandu when I was at UNDP, but never up to the Everest region.
Did it feel significant?
Yes, it did. Look, this is quite a well-trekked area, right? Close to 60,000 people go on the trails through to base camp each year. And we didn't go near base camp. It's kind of a rocky, barren place with a lot of people hanging around.
Yeah.
Although I was offered to drop by for coffee by one Kiwi camp that was there, which would have been nice. But you get off the beaten track a bit. And the village that Ed built the first school and hospital in aren't on the main highway of the track, as it were. So anywhere up around there, you'll be a little bit away from the crowds, which is good.
Yeah. How much exercise did you do? Did you have to do?
Well, quite a lot. We started at walking up to a village, which was, I think, just under 3,000 metres. So you're probably walking from about 2,500, whatever, up the hill to Monju. And then the next day we had to do the Namche Bazaar Hill, which is a very, very long hill. And we stayed there. And then the next day kind of on from there. I mean, we were walking a minimum of three, but more likely 5-6 hours each day that we were out trekking. And we did 11 days up in the mountain region.
Eat plenty of garlic soup, apparently.
And a lot of potatoes. They grow potatoes in the very short growing season they've got in their little fields with the rock walls.
Yeah. When did you realise that mountain climbing and hiking or tramping was for you?
So I grew up on a farm on the edge of the Porongia Forest Park, as it then was. And from my earliest memories, my father would have me and my sisters in that bush. And we would bush crash where there were no trails. We would swing up the rivers, jumping from boulder to boulder. So that's just always been in my DNA to be out and doing things like that.
And it's become quite current to talk about things like mindfulness. When you look back at your political career, do you think maybe there was some therapeutic aspect to getting away from it all and just focusing on the next step ahead of you?
Absolutely. And that's what I used to say when people said, what do you like about going cross-country skiing or hiking, whatever? I'd say, particularly with the cross-country skiing, all you're focusing on is where is your next step or glide going to be? And if you're on a little mountain slope, and I did a little bit of, you know, not so challenging climbing in the Southern Alps like the Hochstetter Dome, which comes off the Tasman Glacier, you just need to be taking care of where your next footstep's going to be.
Yeah.
So it does blank out everything else, and that is quite relaxing, actually.
Yeah. And does fitness help in your professional life?
Oh, yes, because you're doing long days, and I still do long days and late nights and early mornings, so you have to be physically fit. And if you're out there keeping up your hiking and your skiing, that helps.
And so aside from the walking, what was the other purpose for your trip to Nepal?
So it was organised around it being the centenary of Ed Hillary's birth, and the actual date is coming up in mid this month. There's a major dinner, gala dinner in Auckland on the 17th, if people are interested, go into the Himalayan Trust website. So it was decided we'd do, you know, a trek to mark that and to visit schools and hospitals that Ed had built with the support of Kiwis and people around the world over all those years. And it was really touching, actually. Everywhere you went, you met graduates of the Hillary schools, and you always think of how often in our own country, when we take these things for granted, we take school for granted, we don't reflect on how much it meant to people to have those opportunities they'd never had before. For example, the man who was the doctor at the Kundi Hospital, Dr. Kami Tembo, when he was a child, he got his first 4 years of education at the local school in Tame, which Ed had built, but it only went to 4 years. So to go further, you had to walk. So he said the next year his family sent him and another neighbourhood boy, and they more or less boarded by themselves for the school in Kum Jong, which was 3 hours' walk away. And he said it didn't go that well looking after themselves at, say, 9 years of age. So for the years until he finished primary school, he and that boy walked 3 hours each way to school 5 days a week. I mean, imagine the commitment to do that. Then you look at the health issues. When Ed first went there, TB was prevalent. Leprosy was prevalent. And there was chronic iodine deficiency syndrome. So people with the iodine deficiency were not only getting goitre, which of course was not unknown in our own country and around the world till we got iodized salt, but chronic iodine deficiency syndrome leads to what used to be called cretinism. So children would be born with very, very severe mental disability. Yeah. So Ed's intervention stopped all that. That's the phenomenal thing. Now you see the kind of first world diseases coming in, more heart attacks, diabetes, and so on. But just tackling those basic areas of ill health was so important.
And the trust is still active over there?
Yes, it still supports initiatives in around 60 schools because the government budget in Nepal doesn't go so far. It's a least developed country. So, yes, the government has the schools and it puts in some teachers. But the trust here in New Zealand is paying for teacher training. It's often paying for additional teachers so that the children get the quality of the education that they need. Trust is still supporting health clinics in the area, still supporting the nursery, which Ed set up to support reforestation because a lot of the slopes have got quite denuded of forest cover. And so there's three nurseries up there. We visited one, and there's been tremendous regeneration on the steep hill slopes. So all of those kinds of initiatives are ongoing.
See boys and girls at those schools?
Yes, boys and girls. And here's another phenomenal contribution from New Zealand. A wonderful couple in Christchurch have donated computer lab rooms in schools, and it's rolling out across Nepal. And I visited two of them in the schools where you walk in, you know, you could be in your local primary in Mount Albert or whatever, and there's the room of computers and the kids are there. Now, at this point, the schools aren't able to afford Wi-Fi, although there is Wi-Fi in the villages. But downloaded into the computer system is all the curriculum and then, you know, relevant support materials. So they're really a step away when the Wi-Fi can be afforded to doing distance education. And that would then make possible more secondary education, even in the smaller places.
What did you make of the crowds? This is a big news story earlier this year, the number of people climbing Everest. Was there any feeling about that locally when you were there?
Yes, and we were there at exactly the time that the 11 or so people tragically died on the mountain. So, and we were looking at the photos of people hanging onto the rope, getting frostbite, not being able to move.
And Sherpas risking their lives to save them.
Yes, and about a third of all the deaths on Everest over the years have been of Sherpas, and it can hit a village very, very hard when a number from the same family and community are taken out. One young woman we met, who I wrote a story about on social media, who's the health assistant at the little clinic in a village called Fortse. Both her father and her brother died on Everest. Her husband is a trekking guide, and she forbids him from being a climbing guide. She says, I don't need this. We've had too much tragedy in our family. There is now a mountain training school, and it is in that little village of Fortse, and it's supported by the University of Montana and others. And that's ensuring that Sherpas have technical climbing skills, because if you go back to Ed's time, there was none of that kind of preparation. So the Sherpas will train, but the reality is, on a high peak like Everest, 8,800 metres, you will get tragedies. People will have heart attacks. People will fall off. Something will go wrong for someone somewhere sometime.
And when there's poverty, you're going to do whatever jobs are available, right?
Yes, and you've got to bring the money in. It's not cheap living up in villages where everything is either brought in on somebody's back or is helicoptered in if you can afford that. So it does cost to live up there.
I just want to mention too that gala dinner that you have coming up for the Himalayan Trust has Serena Fiennes as a guest speaker. That's a bit of a good get.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Hey, lovely to have you in. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Jesse.
Right, Honourable Helen Clark with her memories of her visit to Nepal.